When one person's word is pitted against another's, how do we exact justice? Keith Montgomery stands trial in the sexual battery of Riley Page. With limited physical evidence, a new form of lie detection, and an investigation under investigation, the Montgomery jury must determine if the truth lies with the victim or the defendant. Arguments have concluded and deliberations are in progress. Famed lawyer Louis Neiser once said, "In cross-examination, as in fishing, nothing is more ungainly than a fisherman pulled into the water by his catch."
Good morning, Miss Page.
Good morning.
I'm going to ask you a few questions about April 19th. Do you feel okay to do that?
Yes.
Okay, good. I just want to clarify a few things we've just gone over.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Let's start with the alcohol. You testified that you recognized Keith Montgomery was inebriated when he arrived in your apartment. Is that correct?
That's correct.
But you proceeded to pour him three more drinks, yes?
Yes.
Then, am I correct in assuming you felt safe being alone with Keith when he was intoxicated?
Before that night, yes.
Had you been alone with Keith when he was intoxicated ever before?
Yes.
How many times?
I don't know, a couple dozen?
And had he ever demonstrated behavior that made you uncomfortable on those occasions?
No.
Okay, thank you. Moving on. I'd like to move forward to the period of time you were on the couch, okay?
Okay.
Okay, Miss Page, at the time Keith made his advance, you said you were complimenting him. What were you saying?
I was saying that he was a good guy and a good boyfriend, and that if Lila couldn't see that, it was her loss. I didn't see it coming.
Thank you. So you were saying he was a good guy? You were flattering him. Is that fair to say?
Sure.
Can you see how a man might construe being flattered by a woman as an invitation if they're alone, drinking, in her home together?
Objection, speculation.
I'd like to answer that. I wasn't aware I couldn't say nice things to people without it being construed as an invitation.
Okay.
To have sex with me.
Okay, Miss Page. When you described the moment, initially, Keith Montgomery began touching you. You said that you laughed. Is that correct?
Yes.
You said, and I quote, "I just thought he was drunk, and I needed to make him stop, so I laughed."
I did laugh. I was startled. It was nervous laughter, and I pushed him away.
Do you consider laughter to ever be a form of flirtation?
Not when I'm pushing someone away.
Miss Page?
And Keith didn't think I was flirting either because he was angry.
Your Honor, can you please instruct the witness to refrain from speculating what my client thought or didn't think?
Miss Page, please limit your responses to what you yourself think.
At this point during cross, Riley covered her face with her hands. Onlookers saw the red hue of her face deepen between her fingers as she sat silently for several long seconds, until the judge suggested they take a break.
It's so sad to make it like she's the one on trial, but in this instance, that's what happens with the cross-examination.
Yeah, it's the job of the defense team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel really bad for her, and I'm also so proud of her for standing up for herself and answering those questions with confidence. Mm-hmm. And but I also understand how she needs to take a moment and break down as well, because this is all hard to relive. And she needs to go through all of it. And I'm sure that's not her preference.
I can understand the defense attorney needing to do her job and her primary goal at all costs being to defend her client. But the manner in which she cross-examined was, I thought...
tactless.
Insensitive. Very, very pointed. I felt
brash. Like, you think that she would be a little more friendly? I mean, especially to like win over the jury, you know?
Yeah.
So she might take a little more.
The tone was just so accusatory and condescending.
Condescending, for sure.
Do you really want to just pour salt in these wounds?
She accused Riley of speculation. I thought that was a hilarious reversal of, like, everything that you're saying is speculative right now. Mm-hmm. All your questions
so
are
leading.
Yes.
But I can see if she thinks Riley's lying, though. I guess that would kind of explain if she's kind of kind of a bitch to her. It's like, because she's like, you're putting my client through all this crap for nothing because you want to get evil.
But I still don't think that justifies a lack of decorum. I just felt like...
it made her look bad, I think.
Yeah.
You know, just by saying, you know, it's like the question about... Riley did a good job of explaining her actions.
Yeah.
And then when she came back with her cross-examination, can a laughter ever be sex? Like, come on. You know, it's like this line of questioning.
It just made me sympathize more with the victim.
I think she's doing her job. A woman who's crass is automatically a bitch. Can we talk about that for a second? If it was a man cross-examining, let's be honest here. Like, just because a woman's being firm and asking questions to defend her client and also show another side of what could have possibly happened, I don't feel like that's her being...
I don't think gender has anything to do with it. I just think there was a lack of respect there, regardless of whether or not you agree with the other person's stance, even if it's, you know, accusing her client of this crime.
And if we're going to tear apart every detail of Riley's tone and Riley's authenticity, then I'm going to do it to the detective, too. I don't know.
I don't feel like we have torn Riley apart.
I think we have.
I don't.
Yeah, we pretty much bought everything she said.
It checked out, but I think we still tried to find inconsistencies. It's not all like our fault that they're not there.
My thought on all this right now is just, it's not that I don't feel, I mean, again, we do not know what happened. We weren't there. There's barely any evidence. The way I'm looking at this and why I'm such I guess the word would be hard ass on trying to show the different side is because we're not here to show emotional support to either person. We're here to convict a person of a crime. And I feel like we're getting awfully emotional about this, thinking, oh, well, I'm proud of her. I get that. But that's not the issue here. It's whether or not somebody did something to another person. So once we start getting emotions into this, that's why I see that this is extremely flawed.
That's a fair point. But if anything, I feel like the defense attorney's approach was designed almost purely to elicit an emotional response.
I don't think
Riley responded very reasonably to the questions when the defense attorney said, what was it about, had you been comfortable around Keith before while drinking, you know? And she's like, well, yeah, before tonight, because I'd had no reason not to be.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I think the laughter question is perfectly reasonable. And like, I mean, I was trying to imagine that, and I was like, yeah, I could see that if a girl, if you're kissing someone and they laugh, I guess she says he got angry. But I mean, I could see that being like interpreted as a keep going, you know, of like, I'm enjoying this, I'm laughing, you know?
I feel like if we want to get emotions involved to it, which I think we have, think of yourself if you were on a trial and you honestly thought you were innocent. Wouldn't you want those questions asked as your defense attorney?
Again,
like,
that was a question I would define, but the... Sorry.
I was going to say, if I was on trial, I would probably defend myself if I thought I was, you know, 100%. If I wasn't guilty, I would want to address these questions. And I don't like the fact that he's not.
Well, because, they usually don't.
Because he is...
No. There's alcohol involved.
The guilty ones don't. I mean,
yeah.
So we think.
I don't know if that's true, though.
I
feel like defendants usually don't testify, but I don't know my law history very well. But
Jerry Sandusky didn't. O.J. Simpson didn't. For good reason. They don't want to get up there because they're going to start talking. Whew.
And then they'll be cross-examined the same way that she was
right.
here.
Right.
except you have less compassion for them because they are not the victim.
Yeah, I don't like it that he's not defending himself. It's like you should be defending yourself for for accusations like this.
It just seems like he has something to hide.
There are a lot of changes in the air, and I think the moment is ripe for seizing this time, breaking out of our comfort zones, and making positive improvements in our lives. Nourishing our bodies is one of the most important things we can do for ourselves, and frankly, the easier we can manage this, the better. Daily Harvest sends creative recipes with must-know superfoods straight to your door, like a cocoa avocado smoothie or mulberry dragon fruit oats. Daily Harvest makes it impossibly easy to try something new every day, and because all their recipes are perfectly portioned and developed by a trained chef, it's guaranteed to taste great. Daily Harvest brings these organic, unrefined eats to your door in cups that you pop into your freezer. Whenever you're ready for one, you just add water, coconut or almond milk, and you blend or heat. And it's ready in 30 seconds and so rich in nutrients. You can actually see all the whole ingredients when you open a cup. Things like cocoa nibs, chunks of mango, whole raspberries, pumpkin seeds, and coconut meat. Try some new flavors and spend the time you save cooking doing something you love. Go to daily-harvest.com and enter promo code DELIBERATIONS to get 3 items free in your first box. That's promo code DELIBERATIONS for 3 free Daily Harvest cups at daily-harvest.com. daily-harvest.com.
Ms. Page, I'm sorry to continue asking you these questions. I'm about to ask you about the physical part of the evening, and it's going to be uncomfortable. And I wish we didn't have to do this either. And I'm going to be as respectful as I can, but the sensitive parts of your account need to be explored, and that's the way this process works. Do you understand that?
Yes.
Good. So, Riley, when you two were on the sofa, you said that your struggles seemed to turn on my client. Is that your recollection?
Yes, it seemed that way to me.
When you two were dating, did you ever engage in physical play that was playfully adversarial?
Playfully adversarial?
Meaning, did you two ever introduce pushing and pulling into your sexual activity?
Pushing and pulling, no, we didn't.
You two never wrestled or anything like that?
No.
You never playfully pushed him away, even if he was tickling you?
I guess if he was tickling me, I might have involuntarily pushed him away once or twice. But that's not what happened here.
I understand that isn't what happened from your perspective. I have one more question. During the sexual activity, you said that you froze.
Yes.
Can you be more specific?
I stopped moving. Stopped speaking. I stared at the ceiling. I was just waiting for it to be over.
You stopped speaking, so you were not voicing displeasure.
I had already told him to stop. I cried. I never voiced pleasure. I never voiced consent.
On direct, you stated that you froze, and then my client pulled down your leggings.
Yes?
Is that the timeline? You froze, as you put it, not only before sexual activity occurred, but before he disrobed either of you.
I don't remember exactly the exact moment I froze. It wasn't like I flipped a switch. I was just pushing and then crying and then I stopped. I wasn't moving and it was happening.
I'm sorry, Miss Page. On direct, you stated that you froze and seized, moving before my client disrobed either of you. Now you're stating you don't remember the exact moment you froze. Are you telling us the timeline you gave on direct might not be accurate?
I don't know. Yes, it was accurate. It was truthful.
But you just said you don't remember exactly the moment you froze, which is correct.
Your Honor, may we take a break?
Why?
I think Miss Page could use another break, Your Honor.
I think she's okay. Do you need a break, Miss Page?
That's what happened! He raped me! If I can't...
Miss Page, you need to please calm down. It's important you only answer questions on the stand. Do you understand? If you need another break, I'll permit it.
Another break was issued, and after her cross, the prosecution did not bring her back to the stand. Victim's advocate, Dean Lionel, was recalled.
It is extremely common for victims of sexual assault to freeze during their attacks. It's an instinctive, self-protective response.
Why do victims freeze during an assault?
There are a number of reasons. For one, people think that in frightening situations, fight or flight kicks in. But in actuality, that phenomenon is more close to fight, flight, or freeze. If anyone's ever posed a question to you and you struggle to think of the right thing to say and go silent or struggle, stumble over your words, that's an example of freezing at work.
What's another reason a victim might freeze during an attack?
Well, rape doesn't always look... Let me start again. In our society, we're trained to think that rape looks a certain way. It's a stranger jumping out of the bushes and holding a knife to you. Or an intruder breaking into your bedroom at night. That's not the way rape actually occurs. It typically occurs between people who know each other. And even victims can struggle with recognizing what's happening to them in the moment it's happening. So when a person like this freezes up during an assault, she or he could be processing what's going on, taking a moment and freezing to understand and come to terms with what's happening. That's another reason.
Are those the only two reasons a person might freeze?
No. Freezing might be purely a defense mechanism, a way to protect the brain. It's called dissociation. A person will retreat inside their minds to a safe place, to shield their psyche from the trauma. And there are more reasons, such as a person might think if she or he fights back, then they'll be endangering themselves and risking injury or death. These are the reasons I'm most familiar with, but I'm sure there are more.
Riley Page complimented him, laughed, and then stopped moving and speaking. These are her own words. Is it really impossible to consider that maybe, just maybe, Keith understood these signals to be consent?
Riley Page pushed him away, said no, told Keith to stop, and cried. I'm sorry, but no. I cannot allow a man to stand up here in front of all of you thoughtful, cognizant citizens and tell you those were mixed signals. Those are not mixed signals. That is rape. That is rape, pure and simple.
Following Riley's cross, the few media pundits who weighed in were in disagreement over the nature of her impression to the jury. While some thought her tears made her look sympathetic, others thought her heightened emotionality could lead the jury to conclude there was an element of instability in Riley Page. Or as one lawyer said, the most important quality a witness can have is solidity. A woman breaking decorum and yelling on the stand can easily jeopardize feelings of soundness and dependability that were previously imbued to her by the jury. To impeach a portion of Riley's testimony regarding playful physicality, the defense introduced a brief email exchange. The subject line read, You've Got It Coming. During their relationship, Riley wrote the following to Keith. Don't you ever tell that joke again, or I will beat your ass. Keith responded, not if I beat yours first. To which Riley replied, ha ha, in caps, now you're making it sound fun. The defense then tried to introduce another piece of evidence. Riley Page belonged to a creative writing group in school. They had their own message board. On April 21st, 2 days following the incident, Riley posted a quote by James Lee Burke. It said, "There's nothing like rejection to make you do an inventory of yourself." The state objected and the jury was excused. The post was ruled inadmissible.
What is trial by ambush?
Well, let's back up for a second and define discovery first. Now, in a trial, discovery is the formal process by which the prosecution and defense exchange information about witnesses and evidence. The purpose of discovery is to allow the opposing side time to find their own evidence to address yours.
Right. It's the legal process that ensures transparency.
Yes, but why is that important? Imagine a trial in which there was no discovery. What may happen? One side could throw testimony into the air and the other side would be scrambling and completely ill-equipped to address it, even if this testimony is entirely refutable. Discovery not only ensures transparency and expediency in our legal system, but it prevents surprises that subvert justice.
What went wrong with the Montgomery defense today?
Today, the defense attorney, Danielle Penn, attempted to introduce impeachment evidence on cross. And that evidence was ruled inadmissible due to trial by ambush. The judge felt the defense should have made this evidence available to the prosecution during discovery so they could prepare for its refutation.
Why didn't the defense turn over this evidence during discovery?
They felt they didn't need to, because they believed this evidence directly impeached the complaining witness.
You're saying if evidence directly impeaches a witness, they don't need to turn it over during discovery?
Yes, that's right, but in this case, the judge ruled that while it may have cast suspicion on the complaining witness, it did not meet the criteria for direct impeachment.
Did the judge make the right call?
In this case, yes. What Riley Page wrote about being rejected does not definitively point to Keith. She could have been referring to anyone, or for that matter, anything. If the defense wanted to use this evidence, which is a good defense strategy, they should have turned it over in discovery. This was, in my mind, a mistake.
What is your prediction for the outcome of this trial?
Honestly, I have no idea how it will swing. There are two forces at work here. The cold, rational, lawful side that dictates the level of corroborating evidence is missing, and the warm, passionate side that wants to believe and protect. I don't know where the jury is headed. I don't know the kind of people in that box, whether they're warm or cold. It's a lottery.
She just wants it all over. I understand her emotional outbursts. I understand her frustration with the cross-examination. And then not being able to tell the story the way that she feels is the information that needs to be told. She's being limited to questions and being told to only answer those questions when they're being asked in a way that is not clear to begin with. Yeah. But, I mean, the freezing up part, oh, man, I understand that. It's survival mode. Again, I keep on saying it, but it's so true. She's just trying to get through the event without getting hurt.
Right, and I think the point that victim's advocate brought up about the typical viewpoint of how rape happens, I think that's right. I think that's how, at least in my mind, or in like, when you imagine it, rape seems more clear-cut, like the stranger jumping out or someone crawling in your window. But, you know, with this, you know, you've always heard about flight or fight. When they talked about the freezing in this as another option, and I've heard of even a fourth of appeasing, you know, that we've, so you have your fight, your flight, your freeze, and appease, and it feels like she did a combination of both appease and freezing in this encounter.
And before that, she cried and said no.
Which I think is fight.
And
that is, yeah. That
yeah,
is.
And so she tried that, and it didn't work, so she tried something else.
Yeah.
I thought the defense attorney's cross-examination was, I thought, kind of desperate. I feel like her arguments have weakened the further in we go, the more evidence, the more testimony that's presented, to the point where it sounded like she was accepting the narrative of them being on the floor and Riley having...
The couch?
On the couch. I wasn't sure if they fell to the floor, but they were by the sofa or the couch. They were on it. And the fact that the defense attorney seemed to be going along with Riley's narrative that she had her leggings pulled down, that she was restrained, and then from that suggesting that because Riley froze, that what was occurring wasn't rape, despite the fact that she'd already cried, said no, struggled, had her hands restrained, physically restrained.
Because of a laugh, a compliment, and the freeze.
None of that justifies.
That would lead him to believe.
Well, they're trying to make the point that maybe they had, you know, that, I mean, it seems weird that they would not have any kind of push and pull at some point, a little flirty, like she was saying, a little tickling, back and forth, rolling around.
She said that sounded like fun.
It seems like that would be natural.
That email, that's a reach. Saying, that's fun. And for me to, put any stock in that, I would need a descriptive occurrence of an actual incident to believe it.
Let's just take out the whole dick getting wet part.
And it was about a joke, that email.
Yeah.
And then they were joking back and forth about a joke. That's it.
And this is at a time with this friend about getting laid.
This is at a time when they were in a consensual relationship together. This is not months later when they were not together and he shows up after sending this text message. It does not equate. I don't think it's fair.
And also a girl say, I'm going to beat your ass. That's a joke in itself. It's light in tone. Yeah.
And it's delivered via email versus... actually being there in person, physically restraining someone, I mean, those situations are not analogous. It is such a stretch to say that they are. If the defense attorney had maybe asked some more specific questions than a little push-pull tickling, I mean, maybe she'd asked about, did you guys, practice BDSM? Did you tie each other up? Was there a dominance submission? Was there a power play? Did you enact, but she didn't ask any of those specific questions. It felt like she was just grasping at straws and trivializing the emotionalness of Riley's testimony. And in doing so, I felt like Riley was freezing up again. I felt like she was reliving this experience. I mean, that's just what I took out of it. But I didn't think that Riley getting momentarily confused about the exact instance when her hands were restrained, I don't think that invalidates her narrative. I just think that shows that she was being forced to reconsider these incredibly difficult events under the pressure of being in a public... I mean, everyone's watching her. Everyone's looking at her. She's given her narrative. And now she's being grilled on the tiniest details.
Well, I think maybe it's because it doesn't. Those details, they don't have to invalidate her narrative completely, but if it does introduce some sort of wiggle room, aka reasonable doubt, if there's a shred of reasonable doubt, then...
Well, I think it's implying, too, that a freeze is instantaneous. Right? What is the moment that you froze? And from my personal experience, and I feel like we've all probably had moments where we've froze... It can be gradual. It can be something where all of a sudden, I can't move my arms. I'm feeling this way. I'm retracting into my brain and the anxiety, whatever it may be. And all of a sudden, you find yourself incapable.
In the first part of her testimony, when she was being cross-examined, she explained how she was trying to laugh. She was trying to say no. She was trying to pull away.
Yeah.
And there was that moment when she realized none of that was working.
Yeah.
And she didn't say freeze, but that's where she kind of had that moment of giving up the struggle. And I feel like sometime around there, she did freeze. And at the point where, and she's saying to herself, is this really happening right now?
Yeah.
I can't believe this is really happening. Yeah. And then he reaches for her pants and pulls them down. She's way past the point of trying to fight and struggle.
she's in survival mode. She wants this moment to be over.
Absolutely.
And then the laughter, all of these things, it's trying to diffuse a situation with someone that you believe cares about you, loved you, was in a relationship with you, that you have strong feelings for.
Let me ask this. Does anyone feel either way about her, you know, heightened emotion ability at the end there? Her, I'm not lying, I'm telling the truth. Did it seem pushy to anyone, or did it seem genuine?
Think she was provoked. I think the situation that she was put in, the sort of, I want to say, petty minutiae that she was being questioned on, because the defense attorney, again, I feel like it's just desperate to find some hole here. So she's relying on this, you know, a few seconds here or there of when you said or did this. It's like the situation is clearly forcible.
She's trying to break her so that she has this emotional reaction, and as a jury we think, oh, she's erratic, we can't trust her testimony.
No, but I thought it was righteous anger, and I feel like if I'd been subjected to that, I would have had the same response.
I agree. I don't think she was pushed, though. I don't think she was pushed in doing that. I think that was, I do agree it was an emotional reaction, but I don't feel like the defense attorney was saying, I'm going to make her do this. Like, no, I think she's honestly asking questions to defend her client.
Mm-hmm.
And it may have been emotional, but you can't put that on her. She's just doing her job. I don't think she was poking and prodding a beast to say, hey, let's get this lady to act irrational.
I felt she was needling.
I do too.
Without a clear direction, without a clear...
Didn't they say her face turned red? She clearly needed a break. They didn't give it to her for some reason. Well, that was, it seemed like she was really being needled.
Listen to her attorney in that moment when she requested that.
Yeah.
That's on the judge, then.
Yeah, I do think that was a failure of the judge and the court to have not stopped that sooner. It's like, how can you possibly expect someone in that state to be giving the testimony that they want to give?
Yeah.
Right. She wasn't able to say what she felt was important to explain the situation. She was being asked questions that were leading in a different direction than what was the truth, which was the reason for her outburst.
You don't know the truth. You can't say that. You don't know the truth.
Her truth.
Cannot say that.
She was under emotional duress, and based on what the victim's advocate said, I mean, for all we know, she could have been re-experiencing some aspects of disassociation. I mean, it must be surreal for her if the narrative that she sang, being up on the stand, seeing Keith there.
I can't imagine having to be put through that. And I think that the defense attorney has done this long enough to know that any type of repeated question about detail like that is going to evoke some sort of emotional response like that. I think that's pointed.
And typically, I think emotional responses would seem less reliable, you know, in general.
There's a strategy here.
See, to me, when I heard that emotional response, it made me think differently, like it was an actual genuine response. So that's why I'm confused as to why you think that that's a negative thing.
What
makes her look like an actual...
Because you want someone cool and calm and collected to be...
No, in this particular case, I figured that would be bound to happen, and that's why I'm just confused as to why...
Sorry, are you talking about the defense attorney, or are you talking about Riley?
Riley.
Having the emotional reaction?
Yeah.
I don't think that's negative. I think it's understandable given the circumstances.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But I feel like it was provoked. I feel like she's been very rational and very calm in expressing her side of the story, what happened. And I felt like the district attorney, the defense attorney, as you said, who's done this many times, is... Her line of questioning isn't based on reason at this point. Mm-hmm. It's
sure, your assumption is, and
my assumption, she's asking
assumptions right now.
I don't think they're emotional assumptions, because she's asking questions about the moment when this happened versus the moment that happened. She's taking an emotionally vulnerable person describing situation.
Oh, so Keith's not emotionally vulnerable.
Well, she's not interviewing Keith.
It doesn't matter. What you're saying is that she's poking and prodding at someone, which is her job, and she's not emotionally choosing questions. She's choosing questions to show the other side of this could be what had happened. This could be
her job is to probe the other edge.
Instance, and if that's hard, That's the deal when you bring someone to a court case. You have to poke and prod and see exactly this sliver can determine someone's life.
If her questions were actually breaking some new ground, then I would agree with you. But I feel like she's just like treading back and forth over the smallest, because she has nothing to grasp hold of. Her defense has very little strength, in my opinion, at this point.
Her prosecution doesn't have much strength either, because there's no evidence.
You have an individual giving testimony who has not repeatedly contradicted herself.
He hasn't contradicted himself.
Oh,
much.
He has.
Yeah, he has. She has as well.
He has the alcohol. He said he wasn't drunk when he went over there.
She said what fucking evidence do we have to show absolutely anything?
Well, they agree.
We do not. We're talking like there's truth here, and there's not. It's verbal testimony of one person and a statement analysis of another person. There's no evidence here. So we're talking like this woman is innocent and this man is guilty from the offset.
Testimony is evidence.
We've been talking about this over the course of many sessions. I don't feel like this is something that we've just latched onto. I feel like we've considered many different perspectives.
I don't see it that way.
How do you see it?
I see it as a very sensitive subject with a very emotionally charged people who aren't looking at this as strictly a case of unbiased information. We're looking at this as an emotional...
Everyone has bias.
Again, I understand. I don't feel like... I'm trying not to be. I'm trying to look at it as two very young people.
They are.
Yes, very young people who have very different stories. And I'm sorry, you can't base.
So you're suggesting that we just don't even try? That we don't even...
No, but all I'm hearing is, I feel so sorry for her. God, I feel so sorry for her. Are you not looking at what the man is going through? And that's my whole point in this. When the defense attorney is asking these questions, A, that's her job, and B, you're not thinking of... He possibly could not have done this. That's a possibility here.
That is a possibility, but we've spent many hours, in my opinion, seeing the likelihood of that being a possibility diminish with each new piece of evidence and testimony. The sincerity and consistency of Riley's testimony, in my mind...
And her failure to do her due diligence of bringing some sort of evidence toward him... That's another thing we're not looking at here. Like, well, she could have brought her clothes. I'm sorry if I'm going through that kind of thing, and I'm not saying every person is the same. What I'm saying is...
Well, just like he could have testified, but he hasn't.
Yeah, that's
But there's
his
also
decision.
Alcohol involved as well. Like, come on now.
It doesn't have to do with anything.
But you know what? If you want to judge someone's conviction on what they said and you're emotionally charged, have at it. I'm not going to participate.
Catherine McKinnon said, "Power is being able to say complete and utter nonsense and have it be believed. Powerlessness is where no matter how much cogent evidence and proof one has, to not be believed." Next time on Deliberations.
Breaking news in the trial of Keith Montgomery.
She said no.
You don't believe that he raped her?
Let me finish and speak.
Deliberations is created, written, produced, directed, and edited by me, Chelsea Cox, and it proudly airs as part of the Audio Boom Network. Today's cast: jury, Lindsay Purcell, Ross Denyer, Lindsay Fishkin, Kevin Bryan, Drew Phillips, and Lindsay Mallard. News and courtroom: Alyssa Ariel Perez, Laura Meadows, Lauren Fiala, Blake McCormick, Edward Brentz, Victoria Dunn, and Ashley Fain. Editorial advisement by Jessa Nicholson-Getz from the brilliant podcast, Getting Off. Thank you to everyone listening for sharing their thoughtful opinions and passionate arguments in this community. I'm really grateful to you for listening. The finale is next week. We'll see you then.